Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we talk about the country's big political issues, as well as the people who make the politics move. My name is Mike Siluma. And in this episode of the Politics Weekly, we are talking to the president of the Africa Maibuye movement, Floyd Shibambu.
Terrible things are happening in South Africa. The leadership is doing some terrible things.
We will not be bullied.
Let's go mirrors to U.S. We're not just backers.
The president did want them to say, if you're going to fire, we'll take it as a declaration of war.
I can't be threatened by Zuma. I defeated Zuma.
You're dealing with Jacob Zuma. Every stage is a theater for him.
We're not sending help to criminals. We're going to smoke them out. They will come out.
There has not been agreement in terms of parties in the executive.
The executive must come here.
The people of Palestine, they're denied the right to enjoy the freedoms we so love.
Welcome to the Politics Weekly.
No. Thanks for having us. I rarely do interviews, but the communications team advised that there's a proposal to talk about Africa Maibuye. Then I said, it's okay.
I
rarely interact with the media.
With the media?
Yes.
But when you're talking to the media, you actually are talking to the people.
I prefer interacting through our own platforms,
not through other media platforms.
Majority of media platforms are not honest.
So
are not honest platforms. They have subjective views. And they're driven by a lot of subjectivity. So at least now the advanced technology, there's a mechanism to interact directly with the people without a mediated platform. But when they said we must come and interact.
You thought you should try it out
said,
and see.
It's okay.
But thanks. Thanks for your time. We really appreciate it. Sure. I wanted to ask you, your second name, is it pronounced Shibambu or Shibambu?
Shibambu.
Shibambu. Shibambu. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I thought I should check because I've heard people pronounce it in.
Yeah, no, it's Shibambu.
Shibambu. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yes. Yeah. And you grew up in Malamulele
I was born and grew up in Maonisi village. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is in Malamulele. So it's currently referred to as Collins Chabane Municipality from 2016 onwards. It used to previously belong to Tulamela Municipality. So after protests and demand for a separate municipality, then it was constituted in 2016 as Collins Chabane Municipality. So I'm from, I spent the my first 18 years in the village there. Mm-hmm. And then thereafter, I came to Johannesburg. So I've been resident of Johannesburg since 2002.
Yeah. We all know what Joburg looks like and what happens in Joburg. Back in Malamulele, what was life like? You know, I mean, because I'm trying to understand what might have influenced your life and driven you into politics.
Setup like any other rural setup with no electricity and communal taps and no library. And of course, looking after the goats and cattle that were there. So we grew up a rural life without much exposure to a lot of information as to what should happen. But we were able to do well in terms of participation in school.
Yeah.
And then after having done matric, then I was admitted at Wits University in 2002.
But what rural things can you do? Can you milk a cow? Can you slaughter a sheep?
Everything else. It is not subject to gloat or bloat to brag about. It's just basic things that
They're regarded as basic.
It's not a major thing. It's not it's not subject to
gloat.
So that is what it is,
So take us into politics. How did you end up in politics? So you come to Joburg. And then what happens with your life that leads you into politics?
Look, I was relatively involved in student politics when I was in high school as well. The first time I was elected into leadership structure was when I was in standard six. I think it's grade eight now.
Yeah.
So from standard six until I finished, I was always in leadership structures. Even when I was in matric, I was always leading the students' representative council in the high school level. And then when I got to Vets University as well, part of the immediate things that I got to do, actually on first day, I went to look for where the South African Students Congress was, but it wasn't existing yet. In my first day at Vets, because there were like a lot of dynamics and problems. But later on, we got to organize ourselves to revive SASCO at Vets University. Then in my first year, I was then elected first as a BEC member, then later on as a branch secretary. And then in my second year, and then I was elected as a branch chairperson. And then in my third year, I was elected as the president of the Students' Representative Council at Vets. But also I then got to participate in many other platforms as well through student politics, like got to be part of the leadership process that was merging the SAU SRC and the South African Technical Students Union, SATSU. So then got to draft the constitution and then founded an organization which I think has celebrated 15 years now, if not 20 years, I don't know, called the South African Union of Students, which was a combination of all the students' representative councils in South Africa, in universities and universities of technology and TVET colleges. So... And then I then later on got to be elected into the National Executive Committee of SASCO, got to be elected into the National Committee of the Young Communist League, got to be elected in the National Executive Committee of the ANC Youth League. And in the intervening period as well, got to work as head of policy and research for the South African Communist Party. And for a temporary moment, also was made to be the acting director of the Chrisani Institute. And then had to have like long interactions with the affiliates of the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU. So then did many political schools and political education for the affiliate unions, particularly the National Union of Mine Workers. And how and SATU and crisscross the country, explaining the politics of the Communist Party, but also of the mass democratic movement. What is National Democratic Revolution?
This is around what is socialism? Around which years, roughly?
So I worked for the Communist Party and the Chrisani Institute from 2007. And then the I had actually started in 2006, then 2007, and then 2008, I then left the Communist Party to go and be full-time in the head office of the ANC Youth League as the national spokesperson, but also as head of political education and policy and research. And that is when we began to talk about economic freedom in our lifetime.
I wanted to ask you, you know, maybe before we go deeper into the politics, the whole point about you deciding to go to Vets to study, you know, what drove you?
Look, so actually, I think I've spoken about this before. So when I was in high school, I always had huge aspiration to go and study Vets University. But I did not know, I didn't have a variety of career options of what I can study and everything else. Then the so when I came to Johannesburg, I was first admitted for civil engineering in what was called Vets Technikon. I think it's now University of Johannesburg, Doron Fontein.
Oh, the one on the other side of
Then I was accompanying my brother, my cousin brother, to go to look for space at Wits University. Because myself already I had written the selection test. I was already admitted for civil engineering. But when I got to Wits, I was like, but actually my original aspiration has always been to study at Wits University.
Mm-hmm.
And then I inquired, then they said that engineering courses are full and the courses in the hard sciences are all full. So what we could study.
So that for the uninitiated, the hard sciences would be what? Engineering?
Or the medical sciences.
Okay.
And all of those things. Yes. Mm-hmm. Then I said, what is available? Then they said, no, you can still register for law, but if you want to combine law with social sciences.
Yeah.
You can then be able to register for that. But I was hearing for the first time in my life that you can study social sciences. No one had ever told me that you can study international relations and sociology and political studies. And no one had ever told me that.
Which would be an indictment, basically, the education.
Yes. And then I said, that is what I'm going to study. So I was then enrolled for BA law in my first year. So I did some law courses. But I then got to have full affinity with the social sciences. And that is what I got to acquire the 3 degrees from Wits University on the social sciences.
Yeah. What are they? So some people don't know, you know. So, you know, so a lot of people know you as a politician. Not so much.
Yes, I got the BA degree in political studies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got an honors degree as well in political studies. Then I got a master's degree in development studies.
Mm-hmm.
So the master's degree concluded in 2014. That is when I graduated. Mm-hmm. And then later on I got to enroll for another master's of science degree with the School of Oriental and African Studies, and then got to, so we've traversed a journey in terms of what we got to then participate in. So the social sciences became my focal area in terms of, I think I've produced like a lot of clear perspectives, which to a greater extent, they have shaped the politics of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now here speaking particularly to younger people, you'd be classified as what? As youth or just after youth?
Yeah, I'm not youth. I'm very old. I'm 42 years old.
You don't qualify. But
I'm very old. Yeah, I'm very old.
But I take it a lot of young people still follow what you're doing.
Yes.
The importance of education. What would you say it is? You know, what would you say to young people listening to your story that you went to Wits and you studied and got 3 degrees, etc.?
Essential.
Why is it critical?
It's very, very, very important. Like, and particularly those who are going to play roles in the political space. Because what I got to discover, and I was speaking about it elsewhere, that you've got a lot of political activists and even leaders who do not have any coherent ideas on anything.
Hmm.
They can rhetoric, they can mimic people, they can repeat what the organization says. But if you were to isolate them to say, if you were left alone to conceptualize and think as to what do we do differently with the economy of South Africa, they've got no clarity, none whatsoever. So the illiteracy that possibly causes chaos in South Africa in terms of developmental issues is the illiteracy of the political leadership that doesn't have coherent and practical alternatives to the crises that are confronting society. Like,
because they're not educated, they don't have a formal education.
They don't pay any attention to details on anything. And they become dismissive whenever you can isolate. Majority of these people who call themselves leaders, even it's worse in the ANC now. I got to realize that when I was working in the ANC clique, I was full time in Luthuli House, and then so by virtue of being in Luthuli House, I would sit in the Economic Transformation Committee and Social Transformation Committee and Communications Committee. And I would realize that some of these people that we grew up looking up to, like when you listen closely to them, that they have got no direction, none whatsoever. Like, and that is what it is. Like, they have no detail. They work on the basis of wrong information and wrong facts. And then that doesn't get to be mainstreamed because the focus is on just electoral participation and winning elections without details of what is to be done differently. And I think it must be a criminal offense. Like, if you want to be a political leader, but you do not have a clear vision of what you want to do differently, and you're unable to articulate as to what should be done differently, because political leadership should be about provision of solutions to the crises that are confronting society, because you lead almost every aspect of society, and you should therefore know what are the qualitative alternatives to the crises that are confronting society. But we've got a lot of staff riders in the political space who have got no clue as to what should happen.
And you think it's a consequence of not having had a formal education?
It's contributory as well. It is contributory that the and that is why when the we got to lead the other organization which we founded, the EFF, we then began to make it compulsory.
I notice you referred to it as the other organization.
So we made it compulsory for everyone who was going to be public representatives to go to school. And I think that is what we're going to do as well with Africa, my brother. That it must not be just job seeking, a platform that I can't find jobs as well anywhere. Let me just go and know how to sing and chant slogans and then get elected into leadership without knowledge as to what must be done differently. So political leadership has to be occupied by people who have got clear alternatives. I mean, like a prime example of what education does to a people or to a country is the meritocracy that defines the Communist Party of China. So in the Politburo of the Communist Party of China, it's very difficult to arrive there if you do not have a PhD or you have not run something successful in a certain region and the economy has grown. And then
Xi is
highly skilled and the entirety of the leadership of the Communist Party of China. And as a result, China has taken more than 800 million people out of absolute poverty, but its economy has grown in a manner that is unprecedented. So the manner in which the productive forces or the economy got to develop in China, it's faster than any other time that has ever happened in history. So if you check the history of industrial development in the whole world, China got to grow faster than any other generation since the beginning of humanity. And that is due to leadership that pays attention to details as to what exactly should happen and how you manage society in a far much more qualitative and better way. But here in the continent, we have got a limitation where sometimes even the ability to sing and the ability to chant can give you political responsibility.
You know what, Floyd? Very soon people are going to be too scared to sing, you know, because the singing has been.
There's nothing wrong with singing. There's nothing wrong with singing, but it must not be the center stage of politics. Politics should be about provision of superior alternatives to the crisis that confront society. South Africa has got a huge crisis of joblessness, of landlessness, of inequality. And to demonstrate that there is no one who is coming boldly with clear ideas as to what is to be done differently. The ANC in its manifesto acknowledges that South Africa has got 12 million people, upward of 12 million people who are jobless. And then it says in its manifesto that for the next 5 years, we're going to create 2 million jobs. Like in the Just leave it like that.
Mm.
And even the strategies and plans as to how the 2 million jobs are going to be created are not believable.
Mm.
Because there's never been any deeper thought as to how that must be dealt with much more differently. And society accepts such that, and then still like 6 million people still vote for the ANC, which says that even after 5 years, there will be more than 10 million of you who will remain jobless.
Mm.
And there is no clear plan as to what has to be done much more differently in terms of it. So education is important for all the roles that have to be played in the political space. And we must encourage those who have political aspirations to go to school and get to enhance and harness their levels of understanding of anything so that they've got clear perspectives.
Mm.
And they must go to legitimate universities.
Yeah, and they mustn't go to shady places.
Yeah. And then they must not get people to write exams for them.
Yeah.
And assignments.
Or get AI to
write assignments for them. They must get legitimate. You must be able to hear when a leader speaks that there is some nuance in terms of the knowledge that they had before and what they've acquired after they'd been to school.
Yeah. Now if all things are equal and they go according to plan, at the next elections, you will be, say the national elections, we can assume that as president of the AMM, you will be the candidate. We're assuming.
Yeah.
Now, South Africans will want to know, okay, what lies behind Floyd, behind the political mask? Because all politicians wear a mask, you know. Either it's a mask of seriousness or a mask of kissing babies or whatever the mask is, you know, that they think people will, you know. How would you describe yourself as a person? You know, I'll tell you why I'm asking you this. Because when I told people that, I'm going to be talking to Floyd, and they said, Floyd is so arrogant. You know, you're not going to get anything out of him, you know, kind of thing. You've heard people say that about you, surely.
I'm a very honest human being.
Yeah.
Like, and upright on everything else that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say and always write, even in the policy perspectives of the organizations that I participate in, that I'm able to own up to everything else that I do in private publicly. So there's nothing which I do which is wrong. But I also have got a deep commitment and passion to the people of South Africa. I think there is a scope. I think that there is a scope and space to could realize the developmental, they call it developmental miracles that characterize the East Asian countries, including China.
Mm.
I think that there's still scope to could still industrialize the southern economy.
Mm.
We could still push agriculture to be beneficial to ordinary people in the rural areas.
Yeah.
I still believe that we can still build mega infrastructure mega modern infrastructure to could connect the South African areas, because the infrastructure which you operate from is colonial infrastructure, which basically takes rail projects from the mineral-rich areas to the ocean. So it's not about the convenience of the economy growing. I still believe that there's a lot of things that we can do to develop not only the South African economy, but the entire African continent. I still believe that we can reclaim the dignity of people of African ancestry in the entire world.
Yeah.
Like, because if there was categorization of people according to race all over the world, people of African ancestry, wherever they are treated as subhumans, or they are poorer. Mm. They are suppliers of cheap and easily disposable labor. Their life expectancy globally, it's far lower than the life expectancy of any other racial group, whether it's in Haiti or in the United States of America or in Jamaica, in Nigeria. So I still believe that we can play a role in uplifting the lives of people of African ancestry. I don't know what is arrogance. So I'm never arrogant. I speak what I believe in, and I speak without fear. Like, it doesn't matter where. It doesn't matter under which platform. So I always speak very clearly in terms of how I deal with issues.
And how would you describe your politics? I mean, you said you were a member of the Communist Youth, the Young Communist League, and you've been in the EFF, as we all know, Freedom in Our Lifetime, and all of that stuff. How would you describe yourself? What are you?
Yeah, my politics always about seeking solutions. What are the better options, and what has worked elsewhere? Like, and we make an illustration, for instance, in the Restoration Manifesto of Africa Maibwe, that the developmental history of the world, like the countries that got to realize faster development, are those that ascribe and were applying proper scientific socialism. That is Vietnam, and that is the People's Republic of China. And proper sober application of scientific socialist principles. And make an illustration as well that all the trials about capitalist development or the capitalist route to development in the entire African continent have never worked. So why would anyone in their right mind say that capitalism is the future or capitalism must be protected at all cost, even when it is responsible for the misery of our people? So I always associate with scientific politics that have been proven beyond doubt that this method works in terms of how you handle certain issues. So that is how my ideological outlook is like in terms of the politics. So anything that is a superior alternative, I believe in, like, and of course, study deeper each and every topic. I think that is the advantage that I possibly have. So if I talk about local government or traditional leadership in South Africa, people will think that maybe that is the only thing that he knows.
When I talk about
industrialization, they'll think that is the only thing that I know. So I've got far much better knowledge of virtually all spheres of society. And I'm not arrogant about it. I always make it my revolutionary commitment to do political schools and political education.
To acquire knowledge.
But also to also teach many people about politics. I do that every day. So my biggest passion is to interact with ordinary people and explain what appear to be difficult. And it becomes much easier for
them. So while you are teaching people politics, if they asked you, so Commander, what were you doing at Bushiri? And what were you two talking about? What do you say to them?
I went to Malawi to meet with the political leadership in Malawi when I was there. And then I went to meet with Prophet Shepherd Bushiri as well. Like, I've been to...
I see you call him Prophet. Some people say he's not.
So, yeah, it's people's beliefs and everything.
So,
do you know, I've interacted with possibly every religious streams which are questioned by different people. Like I was actually saying to Archbishop Zondo the other time, we're having a discussion that South Africa's Christian population is classified to be 80% of the population. But there is very large religious institutions which, yes, believe in the Bible, but they are not Jesus churches or Christ churches. And I got to interact with I've been to many churches, like I've been to the 12 Apostle in Trinity Church, I've been to the 12 Apostle in Christ Church, like the I've been to the Nazareth Baptist Church several times, like Ebuhleni, Ekuphakameni. I've been to ZCC congregations, and people have got always subjective views as to how they view I've been to many churches which are led by apostles, by prophets, and everything as them. And I have taken a correct view that I will never treat any religious belief as illegitimate. I will never delegitimize any religious belief.
Yeah. Mm.
As long as that religious belief is not harmful to society or is not harmful to anyone, we'll never try to question the religious affiliation of each and every person in society. So I went, and I don't regret having gone to the church service there.
Yeah. But the people, and by the way, saying, yeah, this guy is a fugitive from justice. Like, why the, are you associating with him?
The church, which is led by Prophet Bushiri, has got upward of 500,000 members in South Africa today.
As we speak.
Yes, as we speak now. And the, when I was there in Malawi, there were more than 10,000 South Africans there who had registered to participate in the Easter service. In terms of what happens. So there are people who legitimately believe in his gospel and the manner in which he preaches it. And I will never treat them as illegitimate in terms of how society is run and everything.
And do you believe in his gospel?
Look, I choose to preserve my religious belief to myself. I don't speak publicly about that.
You remind me of Nelson Mandela.
So I know the God I serve, and I know how I serve the God that I serve in an appropriate way. And because of that, I'll never try to impose my religious outlook on society or on anyone in terms of how if I was called for that purpose, I would do so excellently very well to explain as to what I believe in, what I believe in.
But politically,
yes.
Do you think it was an error for you to go?
It was not an error.
I'm looking at the consequences in MKP of your going there.
No, there was no consequences in MKP that had anything to do with Malawi. By the way, the MK, the leadership of Mkhonto Sizwe was fearful that I was having legitimacy amongst the members. What President Zuma said is the reason for my removal is that he believed that I'm going to remove him as the president of MK. I want to take his organizations. Those are the words that he used, that he wants to take over my organization.
But didn't he invite you there?
Look, he did, and strangely, in our first interaction, he was saying that I must come in as the president of Mkhonto Sizwe. That was the proposition. Then I said that I can't come as a president, not even as a secretary general. I can join as an ordinary member. You will assign me whatever role that you can assign, but I don't want to be president of Mkhonto Sizwe. I think we are doing a good job, but there are organizational issues which needs some degree of expertise and experience to manage. And that is what we got to assist Mkhonto Sizwe with, because it was in chaos, by the way, when we got there.
And you were put forward as Mr. Fix It, that Floyd is going there, is going to institutionalize the place, rules, constitution, and you did that.
And then we did, and prevented a lot of potential disasters which could have happened in terms of the own internal management of resources and the order which was much needed. And I don't regret having joined Mkhonto Sizwe. I had said when I went to Mkhonto Sizwe that this is the best political decision that I've ever made. And it's true. It was the best decision I ever made in my life, because it got to expose me to a far much wider constituencies and different people whom I would have never interacted with had I remained in the economic freedom fighters. Also, it got to broaden my view as well as to how we interact with different people in society. And that is why I'm not worried none whatsoever about the success of Africa My Way movement. I know that it is going to be a very successful political organization, if not the most successful political organization in South Africa, because of the experiences which, amongst others, I gained through leadership of Mkhonto Sizwe.
Now I know you want to talk less about other people's political parties,
talk about,
but
But I want to talk about Mayibuye.
Before we close that off, are you saying that Jacob Zuma is the one who was behind your being forced out of MKP?
Look, I think I said it elsewhere. There's also a group of people who are stealing money of Mkhonto Wesizwe. The organization is given money by parliaments and legislatures. Some of them were charged them, by the way. Prince Mokotedi was the chairperson of, not the chairperson, he was the prosecutor. Prince Mokotedi is an experienced legal expert. We had charged some people for stealing money of Mkhonto Wesizwe.
And so you were getting in the way of that.
Yes, because I was very firm on principle that organizational resources must be used strictly for organizational purposes. And then, of course, then they ran a campaign and said, and some of them will, of course, have hearing of President Zuma because some of them are family members to him.
We know at least of one family member.
So they'll run a campaign and then every issue. So, you know, I was not perturbed. You know, the mistake which also was made is that, so some believed that MK was doing me a favor by making me Secretary General. I think it's the other way around, by the way. I was doing MK a favor, to try to institutionalize it. And I never took anything. Like, I'll take a basic salary, but majority of the things that will be done in MK, I will use my own resources. Because they couldn't have the respect of even buying banners and proper arrangements. I'll use my own resources to buy proper podiums and banners and have order in the organization with own resources and never demanded anything from them. Even when I will travel, I'll travel with my own resources domestically or internationally. I will never try to extract any resource from it. And then it was what it is. And and a lot of people, by the way, whom we got to lead with in MK, they got to appreciate the leadership roles that we play. That is why Africa Mayibuye Movement, majority of its leaders now come from Mkhonto Wesizwe, and majority of its future leaders as well are still going to come from Mkhonto Wesizwe. I think almost everyone that we got to interact with in Mkhonto Wesizwe comfortably would work with us because they know of the consistency, the honesty that we display in leadership.
I wanted to ask you, and then we'll move into your new journey. When you left the EFF, Julius said he was devastated, basically, you know, publicly, you know, and I think he said that it was he felt like, you know, someone in his family had died or one of his parents had died, right? Why did you leave? Because you had traveled a long journey with him from the ANC Youth League, etc. You were expelled together and all of those things.
No, I was not expelled from the ANC.
What happened?
I was suspended. I resigned from the ANC.
You resigned?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
I resigned from the ANC.
Yeah.
And then I started the Economic Freedom Fighters and invited him to be part of
that. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. So that was the sequence.
That is
the sequence. I'm sure he would want to come back with a different sequence.
The good thing is that now I write, because I communicate through writing majority of the times.
Yeah. So
from as early as 2012, when I was still in the ANC, before the 100th anniversary celebrations of the ANC, I already was arguing that the struggle for economic freedom in our lifetime should be pursued outside of the ANC, because the ANC is not ready to carry such a struggle in the manner in which it was configured organizationally, ideologically, and politically. So that is too much opportunism to could lead a revolutionary struggle for economic freedom in our lifetime. That is what I publicly wrote.
Yeah.
To say that there has to be thinking of the same struggle outside of the ANC in terms of what happened. And then I think around in 2013, then wrote an email to him and other colleagues that let us start an organization. Initially, he was very dismissive. He was like, no, let us fight battles within the ANC and everything. And then around June, 2013, that is when he then said, no, maybe let us pursue that route.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we then agreed to then form that direction.
Mm.
And then issued the clarion call on the 11th of June 2013, which was then calling on volunteers to join the EFF with a view that we might possibly found an organization.
Mm.
And in that clarion call, then wrote the principles which we called the seven cardinal pillars, which are the core of the EFF's agenda, or supposed to be the core of the EFF's agenda in the constitution, in the founding manifesto. And then got to assemble a lot of people. Like, I think almost everyone who was in the founding leadership of the EFF, I recruited them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everyone,
mm-hmm.
like at the national leadership, the current secretary general, my former colleague, Quentin Mbuizeni Ndlozi, Fana Mukwena, Kenny Kunene was with almost everyone who got to play a central leadership role.
Mm.
We then brought them.
But then why would you leave after putting in so much energy and time into a party?
And there's something which I constantly do. I agree to be led, like, even when I realize that some of the things are not correct.
Mm.
Then the EFF, of course, participated in 2014 elections, got 25 seats in parliament. 2019 got 44 seats in parliament. And then, but it had never participated in government, even after having received 757 councillors, and with a lot of hung municipalities in 2016. And in 2021, got 1,119 councillors. And then still didn't participate in government. But then when the EFF began to participate in government, its mannerisms and conduct was not different from the ANC. And that had approval of some of the leadership.
What kind of mannerisms and conduct are you referring to?
Wrongdoing, and I don't want to talk in detail about that.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of wrongdoing,
mm-hmm.
which we called against. And
okay.
And there was also beginning to be retreat from the original perspective, because in the EFF founding manifesto, there's a cardinal pillar called building state capacity with the aim of abolishing tenders.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just now an acceptance that tenders must continue. And then in the process of tenders continuing, you realize that some of the people are submitting their companies to benefit out of
them. Okay.
And that is what I was uncomfortable with, that this is beginning to be shapeless and it's beginning. And then I had options of, okay, what do you do in such a situation? Do you wage a factional battle and say, no, these people are corrupt, these people are doing wrong things and everything else, and try to save the organization? Just leave those things, because it's not even a serious organization. There's not yet gotten to be a situation which you can dedicate factionalism. And also, I don't have the factional bone in my body. I don't contest conferences for the sake of contesting conferences. If anything, prefer to be led and contribute to those who are leading in terms of how they articulate visions.
So what
then I then took a decision to leave. And
the leaving
was, there were multiple issues. Some of the issues are subjective and we can't mention them. Lots of subjective weaknesses which I realized that this is way too unacceptable in terms of conduct, in terms of general behavior. Then I was like, let me leave. And by the way, I was not leaving because of Mkhonto Wesizwe. I was leaving. Like, those who worked with me and closer to me knew that I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I was going to leave, and then I was going to think as to what else do I do. And then coincidentally, in the process of me leaving, there was then a discussion with the Mkhonto Wesizwe. Then I said, like, because I've got some exposure to how an organization should be founded, let me go and contribute to Mkhonto Wesizwe.
Even the conversations that Julius had with you, you know, he said that he visited you and you had a long conversation trying to persuade you not to leave and all that. That couldn't change your mind.
No. I don't work like that. Though I had taken a decision, I had taken a decision that I'm leaving this thing. Like, I can't, there are certain things I can't associate with. There are certain practices and mannerisms that I can't associate with. So I'm not proud of certain things that so, and the only way, and that is what we always encourage people, that don't associate with things that you don't believe in. And if there's wrongdoing, you must disassociate from wrongdoing, and decisively so. And that is basically what I did. And I will encourage, and I actually even say now, to those who are coming to Maibuye, that now that we have got a founding document of Africa, Maibuye. And then we've got an ideological outlook and perspective. If you feel like there is something which you're not comfortable with, don't stay, leave, and then pursue something else. If you had come to Maibuye thinking that it's an instrument for self-enrichment and to make quick money or to get salaries and all of those things, and then there is no such, leave those things and go and look for organizations.
Go somewhere else.
Which can give you those things. There are many that exist for tenders. There are many that exist for manipulation of state resources. Those who want to participate from that point of view can do that there. And not in my view, because we have got different character that is about honesty and corrupt free. And is going to remove the tender system and and capacitate the state to perform its own functions. So that is basically what it is, and
so Floyd, in a nutshell, you know, I know I can see your you know, the manifesto is quite wordy.
It's but, a very but in a, very coherent.
In a nutshell, what would you say the AMM will be bringing to the table?
Our name is not AMM. Let's do that. It's Maibuye. So it's Africa Maibuye Movement. And then the shortened version.
Maibuye.
It's Maibuye. So that is as per the registration of the IEC. So when you register a party, you must then be able to say to IEC that what is the shortened version? Is it AMM? Then the IEC has permitted that we can use Maibuye as Maibuye. The shortened version. Also, the constitution that we're working on the basis of now. Says that the name of the organization is Africa Maibuye Movement, and the shortened version is Maibuye.
Now, let's talk about Maibuye then. What, in a nutshell, would you say it will bring or is bringing to the political table in South Africa?
So this is how
different is it going to be? Because we've got lots of parties in South Africa.
So we are a movement. We're not a party. Like, we're not narrowly a party. And and we're not an electoral platform narrowly. We will participate in elections. So we say, one, we should, these are the, one, we should fight for total political freedom, because the political power, which is even in the ANC's hands now, is not total political freedom. There are certain decisions which the ANC cannot take. But two, we're saying we must fight for total economic freedom as well, which is total control of our economic resources and beneficiating them for the collective benefit of everyone. In terms of, but we're also fighting for total cultural freedom and decolonization, because we are still colonial subjects. That is demonstrated by the languages that we're talking through now. Is demonstrated by our habits and everything else there. We're still colonial subjects, and we want to deal with that differently. But also, we want to build a progressive developmental state, which is going to drive economic development in the same way the People's Republic of China was able to drive economic development. And importantly, we want to be an organization that responds to the crises of society now, and to the extent at where we are possible to resolve the problems now. That is why our clarion call is total freedom and emancipation now. So we are not going to say to people that do not have water that wait for us to be in elections. We will always come with solutions now. Whenever there's a crisis, so these multiple programs and projects which will be in pursuit of now, empowerment of our schools, of the limitations I spoke about earlier, career guidance to guide all students as to what is available at the post-secondary level, There's already programs which are running through Maibuye Medics, which is taking medical care, primary health care to informal settlements which will never have access to doctors. And it's a dedicated focus. There's a division that we have on social assistance led by Hlumelo Biko, which is responding to the challenges now and not just the and electoral platforms. Electoral platforms are very problematic, but political parties that are about elections are very problematic because they only think of our people as voters. And ourselves, we don't think of our people as voters. We think of them as human beings who have got immediate needs which must be attended to now. And that is what Maibuye is all about. And and one of the leaders of Maibuye aptly puts it to say that actually if we could realize full development of our communities through a church or through an NPO, we would do that. But we think now that a political party component as well is relevant for the purposes of contesting elections. But otherwise, our aim and our objectives is not just to gain political power, it's to help the lives and, and livelihoods of our people in a much more impactful and sustainable way.
I suppose as you are continuing with your campaign, people, the issue that will come up is VBS.
Your name
is associated. Does that bother you? What
it doesn't at all, by the way, because so the report which was issued by the South African Reserve Bank and Thierry Motau doesn't have my name. It's got Brian Shwambu, who is my younger brother. And then, of course, people made their own deductions. And I actually took a decision that I can't over-explain myself. If people want to misunderstand whatever things, let them do it. I can't dwell on that. Like, there are issues which the younger brother got to be involved in to settle the issue and everything else there. But it has got nothing to do with me.
Okay, let you know where we put on our socials that we're going to be talking to you.
Okay,
we ask people to send in a few questions. Now, Nati Nice 94 on X says, what is Maibuye's policy? At least he's calling it the way you want it to be called.
Oh, yes.
What is Maibuye's policy on borders, immigration, and overall foreign policy?
So the foreign policy of Africa Maibuye is progressive internationalism and pan-Africanist. That is what it is. And then our position, we explain in detail of what progressive internationalism is. So we associate with the anti-imperialist forces in the world. So we do not associate with the colonial masters and the erstwhile neo-colonial masters all over the world that continue to ravage
the
resources. And all of those.
Europeans.
We associate with the People's Republic of China. We associate fully with the Association of Sahel States in Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali. We embrace those liberation movements in the 21st century fully. And we fully associate with the struggles of what Captain Traoré and the leadership of Mali and Niger is pushing. We associate with the people of Palestine. We are against the Zionism of Israel. We associate with all the progressive forces in the world. And of course, we associate with those that are organized under BRICS Plus. And in the process of that, we also defend all people of African ancestry in the whole world. And we think that we share a common destiny in terms of how that is the Pan-Africanism that we're in pursuit of. And in relation to immigration in South Africa, the Restoration Manifesto of Africa Maibuye Movement says that Africa Maibuye Movement is opposed to undocumented immigration. And then it says that due to the socio-economic conditions of South Africa, there are certain economic sectors and roles that must be preserved for South African citizens. Many other countries do that as legislation is lost, that let's preserve certain economic activities. But we fully commit to the common development of the entire African continent through linkages of infrastructure and increased intra-African trade so that the entire African continent develops. Because what South Africa experiences is socio-economic migration from people from the neighboring countries who believe that there is better hope in South Africa to could make progress than where they come from. It happens internally as well, where people from the province where I come from, possibly half the population, is here in Gauteng because there is hope that there is better opportunities in terms of what happens. And the only way to deal with socio-economic migration is to make sure that each and every part of society of the African continent is developed. And if we have got progressive and clear leadership in the entire African continent that is forward-thinking and forward-looking, we can develop the entire African economy. There is huge potential in terms of the economic resources that are underneath the soil of Zimbabwe, or of Botswana, or of Lesotho, of Swaziland, of everywhere. This huge potential of the economic resources that are underneath the soil of Malawi, Zambia, Nigeria. If we were to pursue a common developmental agenda of the African economy, they will never be a crisis of socio-economic migration that South Africa is a recipient of now, because majority of the African states are not developing in the pace and manner in which the people anticipate.
Okay, just the last one from the we got a couple. Nyiga Elijah Smilex on Facebook says, "Who funds AMM?"
So we don't need funding. There's not much funding that we need, because what we do, we have meetings in a, we actually have published the financial report of the consultation meetings. There's no much funding that was needed, by the way. So we started the consultation in Mawonisi village. The tribal authority all there was given to us by Hosi Mawonisi for free. There was nothing, and actually the tribal council also got to put money together to give food to those people who attended there. The next meeting was in a church in Malamlele town. It was given to us for free. The next consultation was in Pulukwane at a hotel. I think the cost of the hotel was 4,000 rand. So amongst ourselves, we could be able to put 4,000 rand together. When we went to Bloemfontein, the hall was 5,000 rand. And we're able to put 5,000 rand together. And then when we went to the Eastern Cape, the hall which we used for the meeting there, I think, was 3,500. So there's never been any major expenses that are worthy of being spoken to. Even the IEC says declare money, which is a donation of above 200,000 rand. So I've never received a donation of above 200,000 rand as Maibui. We have been scratching on resources. Yeah, we will. We will definitely. We will. We actually met with the IEC last week to make a commitment that every little resource that is supposed to be declared as per legislation, we're going to fully disclose the. But also, we're going to take a different approach to funding of our own programs as well. We will find a way of having mutually beneficial relationship between the organization and its membership.
Yeah.
So a member must benefit something, even socioeconomically, for being a member of Maibui. Like, it must not just be, I'm a member, I'm just told to go and do door-to-door on an empty stomach. So whenever there are opportunities that are available, can be given to groups or to a large number of people, we will avail to all the members of Maibui in a way that will be mutually beneficial to the organization.
So, things like what? Like stockfells or what?
There's multiple proposals as to what can be done with the with an organization like this. Actually, even much more advanced mechanisms of how you can have a mutually beneficial relationship with a larger number of people. Some can propose and say, no, if you want to have a loyalty program for this number of people, you can have them that they've got discounts there and there. But in the process, you can benefit something out of it as an organization. But that will be done openly and transparently. And we, that is the model that we are much more inclined to, that the membership must be the base of resources of the organization without impoverishing them.
Yeah.
And the and that is what, but we're listening to various proposals which are sound and the proper sound proposals that we have been given, so that we do not find ourselves justifying why we should have tenders in the municipality so that we can steal money of government. Because this is how corruption happens. Political leaders go and say, we want to fund the organization, so do this tender, give to this person. This person will fund the organization. First, they will give the organization. Later on, they're no longer giving the organization. They're giving the leader themselves. So we don't want to find ourselves in such a situation. But two, also, we do not want to find ourselves in a situation where the white capitalist establishment, the Oppenheimers, and all of those people, they want to take advantage of Maibuye and then give us money. We'll not even accept it. We will find a dynamic way to sustain the organization without a reliance on any other. And then we'll see as well what are the meaningful and practical internal business opportunities that the organization can pursue to sustain its. But also, we are not planning to engage in highly costly activities and programs. We can reach out to our people without without spending 50 million rands for one gathering. There's a far much more effective way to reach out to our people without spending a lot of money. I can tell you that we went to the whole of South Africa, like over 60 days, but the entirety of that program was not as difficult.
And we
realized that that model can be sustained over time.
I wanted to ask you this, that, you know, in recent times, we've seen a proliferation of political parties. You know, some are not even what you would call political parties. It's a person and their jacket and their laptop, and they register and they say they are a political party, you know. Is that helping the struggle to transform South Africa, to have so many different political parties, particularly the ones which are claiming to speak for the majority?
Look, I think people can do whatever they want to do. Like, if they want to register a political party out of their own mandate, they can do that. And, but the different case with Maibuye is that we have got a legitimate mandate from the people. Like, we've got a legitimate mandate. We can demonstrate the mandate from the people. When we went to ask, what is to be done? The people said, go and register a political party, but don't make it a political party like these other ones.
Yeah.
You must attend to our concerns and problems now. So we have got a legitimate mandate from the whole of South Africa, but also from leaders of society.
Yeah.
Like very senior leadership of society. Like traditional leaders, religious leaders, who even said, why are you consulting for such a long time? Just go and register a political organization. Yeah. We have got the mandate. We're not doing this on our behalf.
Yeah.
We're doing it on behalf of the people that gave us the mandate.
Yeah.
And the people that gave us the mandate are demonstrating now through the support that they continue to give us that we've mandated you.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is our organization. So this is not Floyd Shivambu's organization. It's an organization of the people. We were mandated by the people to found Africa Maibuye movement. Even these colors. Like people are asking, where does the people come from? Because the royal leadership says that we want royal color there. Like, and the royal color, which is acceptable everywhere, is purple. So you must see where you put purple, then we had to encircle the logo.
So the purple stands for
The representation of, then the, and coincidentally as well, the faith leaders and religious leaders say that they are covered in that color as well, because that is the color which they associate with in terms of the faith-based institutions.
So, asking the question differently, Floyd, do you subscribe? Because there was, after the election, there was talk of the forces of the left or the black parties needing to work together, to advance the cause of transformation. Do you subscribe to that? Do you see yourselves as part of those forces?
Look, I'm strongly opposed to the Democratic Alliance playing any role in national government.
Hmm.
And I didn't theorize about that. I led the negotiation for the EFF. I spoke passionately to ANC leaders, to even MK, that let us not allow the reincarnation of white rule in South Africa. I'm strongly opposed to that. Actually, even in Parliament, when I debated the State of Nation Address last year, I said that it would have made sense if the political organizations whose umbilical cords are buried in the same yard were to unite and not focus on the petty differences. Mm-hmm. Because the fact that there was no unity between ANC, EFF, and MK, it was because of petty personal differences. And that, and I pleaded with everyone to say that let us not allow white rule to return in South Africa. These people have got no interest for the black majority.
Mm.
They want to protect the colonial or neo-colonial status quo. They are not loyal to the African continent, none whatsoever.
Mm.
They are loyal to themselves and to their colonial interest. So that is a So even moving forward in the future, we will not agree for a white government. And not that we're against white people as individuals, but the white political parties that exist in South Africa today, they are racist in character and nature. They are about reaffirming and reliving the entire system of white supremacy, which we're trying to break away from. So that is basically so we're part of the progressive forces, and we will reinforce that agenda unapologetically in terms of how we push moving forward.
And do you ever talk to Julius these days?
I don't. I've never gotten time to. This thing is simple. We had a political relationship. It was a political relationship, and then of course, because we're working together and everything else, that is how it happened. So we don't. Interact even with President Zuma. I saw him from the distance when we went to Umkhosi Womhlanga, but we have not got to interact.
So what did you do? You just went?
No.
We're
very far from each other. I was sitting with the leadership of Maibu here, but also where we're sitting, there was some of the senior traditional leaders, and then the members of parliament and from different political parties, and small talk. So we're busy now with Maibuya. So majority of the people that we are speaking to are those who are interested in Maibuya and its development.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You know, I've always wanted to ask, you've had quite a few political homes in your life.
Yes.
What do you do with all the paraphernalia when you move from one party to the next? Do you burn the stuff? Do you keep it for memory? Do you, give it back to the?
No, I don't even think about that. I focus on what I have to wear now. But the good thing is that, despite heavy bid to the ANC, EFF, MK, Maibuya, my ideological outlook and politics have never shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is that you can track the history of the things that we have publicly written and a lot of policy perspectives. You can see a common thread of consistency in terms of what we stand for.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't change principles and adapt to wrong things because of different political parties. If anything, we stick very firm on principle issues as to what we represent. And that is what the politics have all been about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Floyd Shibambu, president of the Africa Maibuye movement, or Maibuye for short, as he insists.
Yes.
We thank you very much for joining us on the Politics Weekly and for sharing your thoughts.
No, thank you. Yeah.
About
thank
your
you.
Plans going forward and where you've been, etc.
Yeah, no, thank you for having us. It will be very difficult in the future because the communications team will be launching an internal podcast of my view, so we'll be speaking from that point of view.
We're glad that you could come before your guys could get their act together, you know.
No, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, stay blessed, stay safe, and let's do good for our country.